This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight, with me, you have Paul.
Hello.
Dean.
G'day.
Madeline.
Good evening.
And myself, Matt. This is the second part of our look at the United States Supreme Court ruling to legalise same-sex marriage in every American state. And tonight, we look at the long path to get there through the eyes of one of their longest-running and most persistent activists. How did it come to fruition? What makes this victory so sweet? And what advice does this long-time activist have for Australians fighting for same-sex marriage?
And when the Supreme Court ruling was handed down, a camera captured that moment where a pair of lesbians heard the news and burst into tears. That person is not only a long-time LGBT activist, but was also the first out gay comedian on US television. That person is tonight's guest, Robin Tyler, comedian and out and proud activist since the 1960s. She's a passionate straight shooter, and here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
This movement was led and forced by grassroots people. We went to courthouses all over the United States. Diane and I have been going since 2000 and asking to get married and getting turned away. As we started demanding that, it grew and grew and grew. So when there was just maybe six of us one year, the next year they'd be 25, and the next year they'd be 250. And so in Australia, it doesn't matter what your opposition says. Keep the pressure up.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
And we start off this week in Kenya. President Barack Obama of the US is going to be heading to Kenya later this month, and unfortunately not everyone's that pleased.
Now, he's from Kenya originally.
You have to be careful what you say, Matt.
You're not a birther, are you? You're not one of those birth certificate people like Donald Trump. No, look, his father was originally from Kenya.
That's right.
So, you know, his grandfather was a Kenyan goat herder. So it says a lot in the States that, you know, you can come from humble backgrounds and you can eventually become the president of the United States.
But what's got the Kenyans so excited?
Well, not that many, only dozens, but dozens of Kenyans have rallied in Nairobi this Monday against homosexuality. And one of their lawmakers spoke at the rally and said, "We are telling Mr. Obama that when he comes to Kenya this month and he tries to bring the abortion agenda, the gay agenda, we shall tell him to shut up and go home." So that was lawmaker Irungu Katanga.
President Obama does have a bit of a reputation from bringing up human rights issues when he visits countries, particularly in Africa, and it's not a hard thing to bring up.
Well, the White House press secretary has said the protection of basic fundamental human rights in Kenya is a priority and consistent with what they hold dear in the United States of America. Now, unfortunately, if you are gay in Kenya, it's not a lot of fun because you could be sentenced to up to 14 years in prison, which is a bit of a problem. But the White House has said that one focus of Obama's trip will be to encourage entrepreneurship. So we'll just have to wait and see. But yeah,
of course, the other side of that whole argument, African leaders often use anti-gay remarks as a way to win public support.
But unfortunately, it has a negative impact on all those other countries where they're asking for aid money, who unfortunately don't want to give, well, actually, unfortunately for them, fortunately for us, don't want to give them the money because they don't have a very good human rights record.
And next up in South Korea, Korea's first gay married couple on Monday filed a suit against the registry office that refused to register their union, the first legal challenge of its kind in the conservative country. It's written here as Shy Wallflowers. Film director Kim Jo-wang-so, 50, and producer David Kim, 31, wed in Seoul in September 2013 at a public ceremony attended by 2,000 people. They then tried to register their marriage at the local registry office in December that year, but they were told that civil law did not recognise same-sex unions. They appealed in May last year, but their application was rejected.
Today might be an important giant step, but not just for me and Kim, but for all the LGBT nations. So they know this is really, really out there.
It is, but they're mouthy enough to maybe get their own way.
But they're shy wallflowers.
Yes. Look at the photos of them, and they're anything but shy wallflowers. That's ironic, I think.
I do like the last quote. I believe it will take South Korea as long as the US to legalize same-sex marriage.
Across to Uganda now, some not-so-good news, where former Ugandan national football manager was tortured in order to prove that he's not gay. Chris Mubiru is facing charges of sodomising one of his team players after he was allegedly exposed by a tabloid. Now, the tabloid is called Red Pepper. We've talked about it before. It's an infamous newspaper known for putting the photos of people who they just think is gay smack on the front page of the paper.
What's a bit surprising about these photos in such a homophobic country is how explicit these photos are, and in fact so explicit that the paper sold so well that the issue was reprinted for another 2 weeks. So, because people were obviously so scandalised, they just had to pore over these explicit photos over and
you don't
over
get
again.
To see anything. It looks like there's two people sort of near each other.
They've got their shirts off.
Sounds like you guys have spent a bit of time just, doing your due diligence, checking it out, right?
Well, interestingly, the headlines are pretty gross.
His own lawyer asked the doctor to give him an anal probe in order to prove that he was not gay, and he went through this test. And we see this in some countries where they do this quasi-medical thing looking for, any damage or anything like that. And the doctor did this test. He said he has studied many victims of sodomy and has experience in such cases, and he found that he's not gay.
It's a horribly invasive test, and we have talked about it before, particularly in our story on Egypt, which you can find on our page if you want to listen to the podcast. And it's appalling. It really is. Moving on to China, if we want to move on to yet another gay marriage. So there's a lesbian couple in China who've decided to push for legal recognition, and they tied the knot in Beijing to push for marriage equality. Now, they couldn't be bothered waiting for the law to catch up, so they decided to flounce on down the aisle without any sort of legal say-so.
Indeed, they said that the Supreme Court decision in the US inspired them to have their own wedding ceremony.
Everyone in China was then celebrating it, but that's a US law. What use does it have in China? We should do something about it. So they had a ceremony in Beijing. They're pushing for it to be legalised. So they exchanged wedding vows and rings in a private room in a restaurant, which was decorated with balloons, rainbow flags and photos. Now, of course, it is China, so the security services have already got in touch with them to inquire about the wedding. But
they wanted an invite, I'm quite sure.
I hope so, but they are excited about the attention they've received and they're hoping it leads to change.
They probably wanted to take their own photos.
Now, we are off to the US tonight, but we thought we'd talk about Girl Scouts at first.
Some good news.
Yeah, finally. Girl Scouts raise $100,000 in one day after dropping transphobic donor. The troop has been overjoyed to receive a $100,000 donation in the last month, covering nearly a third of the council's yearly operating costs. The money was meant to help 500 girls attend troop meetings and summer camps when their families couldn't afford it. But the donor sent along one caveat.
What was the caveat?
Please guarantee that our gift will not be used to support transgender girls. If you can't, please return the money.
And they very quickly, they did straight away because...
turned around and said, Girl Scouts is for every girl. Every girl should have the opportunity. So they sent the money back. How
because
incredible
there
that?
Is not one type of girl. But did it mean that they were so poor they had to live on stale Girl Scout cookies? No, it did not.
No, they turned it to their advantage.
They did.
They set up an Indiegogo fundraiser that went live to recoup the lost funds.
They got $60,000 in 4 hours.
Pretty impressive.
And then they went on to get the full 100,000. So they got their 100,000 without ties and without homophobia and transphobia.
So there's some transphobic wealthy person wailing and gnashing their teeth somewhere because their funds weren't accepted.
We tip our hats to them. In brief, across to Germany, Conchita Wurst has braved 35-degree temperatures to celebrate Cologne Pride.
In Malaysia, the PM has said there's no need for events like a gay parade because it's too open.
In the US, a polygamist in the state of Montana is insisting he should be able to marry a second wife after the Supreme Court legalised same-sex weddings.
And the LGBTI rainbow flag could become an emoji soon due to the recent popularity and the online debate. That's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam, Apple, and Tom from Apple Models in Thailand. the world first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
We are tonight exploring the US Supreme Court decision to legalize same-sex marriage. Let's take a look at some of our fun fast facts.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your fun fast facts.
So the decision by the US court means that the last 14 states that were holding out against same-sex marriage now have to comply. The decision was an interpretation of the 14th Amendment stating that limiting marriage only to heterosexual couples violates the amendment's guarantee of equal protection under the law. But there are some noticeable differences around support for same-sex marriage within different groups inside the US.
Yes, so for example, the majority of whites and Hispanics, so 59% of whites and 56% of Hispanics, favour same-sex marriage compared with 41% of African Americans. Now, religion continues to be a major factor in attitudes as well. So 85% of those who are religiously unaffiliated favour same-sex marriage, and 62% of white mainline Protestants and 56% of Catholics are also supportive.
The least supportive group? Have a guess.
Could it be evangelicals?
Yes. Southerners. White evangelical Protestants, 27% support.
Oh, geez. Now, adults in the silent generation, as they like to call themselves, so ages 70 to 87, are the only age group in which significantly more oppose than favour same-sex marriage. So 52% in favour, 39% opposed.
And not surprisingly, the states that already had same-sex marriage, the people there are more in favour, 68%, compared to those that were living in states that didn't have it legalised, which was 43%.
Prior to the US Supreme Court ruling, same-sex marriage was legal in 36 states and the District of Columbia. And now, of those 19 states, gay marriage became legal starting last year. Do you think this is there going to be an absolute flood across the country of gay divorce, is my next question.
Look, it's got to happen.
I believe it already has happened.
With the good comes the bad, yeah. Interestingly, Native American tribes, they have their own jurisdiction over their own affairs and laws, but already there are 11 Native American tribes that do recognise same-sex marriage.
That's good. So nearly three quarters of Americans said they saw eventual legal recognition of same-sex marriage as inevitable. So that's 72%. And lesbians account for 60% of gay marriages.
Wow. Interestingly, so it's roughly the same when you ask people, you know, when you ask gay and lesbian people, would you like to get married? It's roughly the same, 56 to 58%. But the ones that actually go through with it? 60% lesbians.
What does that say? Gay men are commitment phobes?
Nesting?
Nesting. They've already moved in after the first date. Yeah,
yes.
So they've moved in. You might as well just formalise it.
The US has now joined 20 other countries which allow gay and lesbian couples to wed in all their jurisdictions.
So you would think it'd be more than that, but the fact that the United States and some of the countries that have legalised same-sex marriage are very big, very prominent countries, if not even only culturally, like, say, the United Kingdom, then, you know, it's really had a big impact on the world.
But as we pointed out in a previous show, not the whole of the United Kingdom actually allows.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about Northern Ireland.
But Northern Ireland, I saw today actually the polls, support for same-sex marriage is at its highest level. So I think this whole momentum between the Irish referendum and the US Supreme Court decision is really swinging a lot of interest in this debate. We are exploring all that and more as we look at the USA on World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
We had the pleasure of speaking with Robin Tyler. Now, Robin is a comedian, I guess, by trade, but has been an out-and-proud activist since the 1960s, advocating for LGBT rights in America. And we started by asking Robin about the YouTube clip that went viral showing her and her wife, Diane, at the exact moment when the US Supreme Court ruling became public.
The advocate wanted me to do that, and I thought it was just for him. I had, because no combing the hair, nothing. It was 6 a.m. in the morning. So we cried and sent it to him. And the next thing I knew, it was all over the place.
So for a country like us that is yet to achieve marriage equality, tell us what it feels like.
Well, you know, my wife and I fought for it in California. Actually, we were the first couple to get married, and it was very, very exciting. It was, you know, people, they say, well, there's no settling for domestic partners or civil unions. It's like marriage segregation. You know, the water fountains, when African Americans had a drink out of a different water fountain, we said, well, after all, it's the same water. Yeah, but what it does is dehumanizes the people that aren't allowed to drink out of the real water fountain. So once you get married, it is absolutely, and everybody said this that I know, even people that were against it or didn't think it was an issue, it absolutely feels like nothing else. It just, you know, when we travel and we go anywhere, and I don't have to say this is my partner because they think law partner, then I just say this is my spouse, so she's, you know, this is my wife, and it feels wonderful. A lot of people are afraid that because we can get married, we'll assimilate into heterosexual society, right? And the fact is, civil rights has never equaled assimilation. We can all be magnificent and still have civil rights. I talked about on television, they said, how do you feel? And I said, all the young men that died of AIDS whose families came in and wouldn't allow the partner to come to their funeral or visit in the hospital or took all of the possessions, the tens of thousands of men that had to be not only lose their lover or lose their partner, but lose everything else because they had no legal recognition. And so I think legal recognition of our relationship is very important, and it feels absolutely fabulous.
You've fought for a lot of things over many, many years. Even 10 years ago, did you think that you would see same-sex marriage legalized in the U.S. in your lifetime?
Yes, I absolutely did. A lot of people were saying, look, the Supreme Court gave us marriage. Nobody gave us anything. We fought for it. Nobody is going to give you anything in Australia, anywhere. There's an old joke, you know, of mine. A woman walks into a dentist's office and he goes to drill her teeth and she grabs him by the balls and says, now we aren't going to hurt each other, are we, doctor? So that's my kind of politic. No, the Supreme Court of the United States did not give us marriage rights. This movement was led and forced by grassroots people. But what we did is we went to courthouses all over the United States. Diane and I have been going since 2000 and asking to get married and getting turned away. As we started demanding that, it grew and grew and grew. So when there was just maybe six of us one year, the next year there'd be 25, and the next year there'd be 250. And so in Australia, it doesn't matter what your opposition says. Keep the pressure up. They'll bend. If you hit a stone long enough, you know, even a stone will crack.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight we've stopped off in the USA looking at the monumental Supreme Court ruling allowing or enforcing same-sex marriage right across the USA. Robin Tyler is our guest we've been speaking to. She's been a campaigner for LGBT rights since the 1960s. And we asked her how she got her start as an activist.
I was in New York and I was a young kid. I had moved from Canada and I went to a drag ball. And drag is when men put on everything that we lesbians refused to wear since we were 3 years old, right? And I went to a drag ball. The drag ball was on the first floor. And on the second floor, I swear to God, was the policeman's convention. So they raided the drag ball and they arrested 44 drag queens and me for female impersonation. and they took us, and all the queens were saying, but that's a girl. She's a girl. And the cops were saying, well, you all call each other girl and Mary. How do we know? So they allowed me one phone call, and I called the New York Post. And the next day, the headlines read 44 men and one woman arrested for female impersonation. So then I got a job. I said, this is great. And I got a job at the 82 Club in New York. And as a female impersonator, this is long before the movie Victor Victoria.
Yes.
And I got a job and I did Judy Garland. And that's how I started on being an activist. And when I was working at the 82 Club, we met drag queens. We also met men that were transitioning. So it's not controversial to me because the waiters would take hormone shots and would have mustaches, but they'd be in love with, you know, the guys on stage, and they'd sleep with the drag queens, and then the waiters, the women waiters with mustaches, would be pregnant. I mean, it was very gender bending, and this was in the 60s. So that, and they would chase us home after the show, and people would call us the F word, you know. And so it just radicalized me. But from the time I came out, when I was in Canada, I was 16 years old, and I was best friends with a guy, gay boy. We were the only ones out. We would stand on the corner of Portage and Maine in Winnipeg and hold up a sign saying, gay is good, in 1959. And people thought we meant happy and would give us money. So
it's a new way of busking.
So right from the get-go, I said, no. I came out immediately. Not because I was, like, brave. I was stupid. I didn't know people would think it was that sensational. I just thought it was like saying, hello, I'm an Aries, I'm Jewish, I'm a lesbian. And didn't go over well in 59.
You touched briefly on the AIDS epidemic there, and there were so many gay men dying. At that time, the lesbian community really took an active role both in caring for gay men but also advocating for change. What do you remember about that period?
Mostly I remember Larry Kramer, because Larry, I don't know if you know who he is.
We certainly do, yes.
Okay, and I remember Larry, and everybody said Larry was too radical, and I thought, no, because, you know, I'm like a female him. I mean, so I remember Larry Kramer, and I remember doing the die-ins, and he refused to call it an epidemic. He kept saying, it's a plague, it's not an epidemic, it's not measles. So mostly I remember Larry pushing, when people, like, shied away from him, and then all of a sudden, you know, it started to build, just like the marriage thing. You know what I think is interesting? In 1987, I produced the main stage for the second March on Washington, and there was about 1 million people there, and the two biggest ancillary events to that march were the AIDS quilt, and the other thing was the marriage ceremony. And of course, tens of thousands saw the AIDS quilt, but we saw the marriage ceremony that I produced. Thousands of couples came, and you know, the march didn't want to have a wedding. They said, nobody's going to be interested in getting married, and it's patriarchal or whatever. You know, all the hype. It's this, it's that. And I think we had 6,000 or 7,000 people there. So I believe at that point we went from a gay liberation movement to a lesbian and gay civil rights movement. This is a movement about our right to love and to do it openly. And so that I think it morphed from a gay liberation movement to a gay civil rights movement. And people thought, well, if we're civil rights, we're going to assimilate. You know, if we have our civil rights, we'll just be like they are. Well, you know, Rosa Parks never said, well, gee, if I can ride on the front of the bus, I'm going to be just like white people. Having civil rights is not assimilationist. It just means you have a better chance of survival.
You were a part of the fight against Proposition 8, which was called by some as the second Stonewall. Do you think the younger generation of Americans coming through now are as willing to be activists for LGBT rights or human rights?
Yes, I do. Prop 8 is the best thing that ever happened to us, because in California, when we won the case in California, and it was called Tyler v. the State of California, and we won marriage, and we were put into the Constitution. In other words, for the first time, gays and lesbians were part of a state constitution. When Prop 8 went through and the Supreme Court ruled to let it stand, it's the first time that anybody ever in the United States has been taken out of a constitution. So if they could take us out, they could take African Americans out, they could take Ukrainians, you know, stop them from teaching schools on Tuesday. It was a very dangerous thing. But it was a shot heard around the world. What was great about Prop 8 was that if we could have rights taken away from us in California that looks like it's such a liberal, progressive state, and it is in a lot of ways, then who's safe anywhere in the world? And so that was like Rosa Parks being kicked off the bus. And after Prop 8 happened, we started hearing from places all over the world, and the issue became marriage. Not that the really most important issue was marriage, right? Because the right to work, the right not to have housing and not to be violated, not to be murdered. But marriage seemed to resonate with our own people. So we ran with it. If that's what the grassroots wanted, if they decided this movement was about the right to love and to solidify that love and have legal rights, then we ran with it. But Prop 8 was absolutely the best thing that happened.
That's LGBT activist and comedian Robin Tyler explaining for us how marriage got on the agenda in the USA. I did love that thing about holding up the sign in 1959, gay is good, and everybody thinking, oh, that's nice. You know,
young people with Canadians. A positive attitude.
And Canadians are so polite.
They're so polite. Oh, that's lovely.
It's nice of them to be so happy.
Let's give them some cash.
Robin did mention there trans people. There's more coming up in the interview because she's actually become a bit of an activist in the trans space now as well. So we'll hear about that very shortly.
But she did say something quite sweet where she talked about women with beards who are pregnant and kind of talking about a bit more
that
of
whole gender-bending experience of the 60s and 70s.
Yep, so it was a nod to that, and it's interesting to see where we are now, so I'm keen to hear what she says next on that kind of front.
We really are, as a society now, quite conservative compared to what was going on back then, really.
Yeah, I wanted to be in that club. That sounded amazing.
With a moustache on? Or?
Absolutely. Not pregnant, but the moustache would be fine.
Now, 1987, the marriage ceremony that was staged, everybody was saying, you know, only 7,000 out of a million people turned up, but everybody was saying, you know,
patriarchal,
oh, it'll never happen. And
conservatism. That sort of thing. But
I think the speed of change is quite phenomenal.
Well, she says that there was a groundswell of, you know, ultimately people, I think a lot of people want to be in that long-term relationship and they want it to be recognised and they don't want to have to hide it from the government or from their neighbours.
But I would say there was resistance. There was resistance here too.
Oh,
people
definitely.
Saying, oh, no, we deliberately don't want that because it is what straight people have. We want to be different. And now that has come full circle, really.
I think legal recognition has its own benefits.
Hmm.
Do you think anything's lost in the queer community by that? You know, she said it's not an assimilationist, but is there anything lost?
I think Lana would have a point of view on that.
Maybe she can message in when she gets out of the pool. yeah, look, I mean, I do agree with her that it's not assimilation, yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair thing and shouldn't be seen that way. It's not something to necessarily aspire to.
Well, with the legal rights, it's kind of you still get legal rights and then you can also still be a separate community, I guess was her point.
I think we've got both now. I think the whole concept that we've assimilated and that the alternative community doesn't really exist anymore, I think that's been overstated. Mm. I just think the alternative community isn't as publicly sort of visible as the mainstream same-sex community.
This issue of youth and the next generation, because I was a bit surprised when she had absolute confidence that the next generation is on board with activism. Do you think it's the same in Australia?
I think they are. I actually think so as well. I'm optimistic about that.
The gay marriage movement here is there's a pretty strong youth contingent. I think there's a bit of an expectation. I know that, you know, a lot of the gays and lesbians I come across who are under sort of 25 see marriage as an assumption of something that will happen rather than, you know, and something that should happen rather than a question mark that some of the older queers that I know might have.
But I think back to a few weeks ago we had the same-sex marriage march and protest here and numbers were down. Like, it was pretty down. So is it more about online clicktivism than standing up marching?
It was cold, I believe.
So do we have fair weather protesters only?
Maybe that's why there's such a groundswell to get it done before Christmas, because it'll be really nice outside when, you know, to
Absolutely.
Protest in, you know, November or something.
Yes.
Now, we wanted to leave you with something that we found online. It's a YouTube clip we've just posted on our Facebook page. So if you go to W3Joy or Worldwide Wave on Facebook, we're going to give you a taste of what you'll see. It's called Judge's Delight, the Supreme Court Marriage Wrap, and it features RGB, which is Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Check it out, I'm the notorious RPG mofos, and I came to rule the day. I made gay marriage legal with my gavel in hand all across the USA. With my black-robed crew judging false from true, we made love the law of the land. Love wins the day is what the country does say, and oppression we will not stand. So don't F with me, cause I'm the RBG, and I will crush you with my mind and reason. Dispensing dignity, easy as 1, 2, 3, though Scalia thinks it's treason.
Jiggery pokery, jiggery pokery, jig 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 jiggery pokery. Oh, 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 apple. awesome.
I am the RPG, and I can promise you that the Constitution I will defend. America, the beautiful, to it I will be dutiful. I love it to the end. If you can't tolerate, if equal rights you hate, if you have marriage equality doubt, live somewhere else. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. Notorious RBG out.
This is Samuel from Kenya on Worldwide Wave.
You are on Worldwide Wave. We're in the US tonight. We've been speaking with our guest, Robin Tyler. After years of campaigning for LGBT rights in the USA, Robin has turned her efforts towards trans rights.
Joy.
Well, first of all, I have friends.
Yeah.
We'll start off on a personal level. You know, Bambi Selico, and I have friends. I also saw transgender people again at the 82 Club because it wasn't a political issue. I knew people. It's an important issue because I think the base of homophobia, what makes people so scared is gender difference, that they are afraid that, you know, you always see people, if there's very feminine lesbians, they, you know, they seem to say that's okay, or very masculine gay men. But if you ever get anybody that's not, you know, that's what the youngsters call gender queer, then that really seems to upset people. You have to have compassion for other people. And so I have great, I don't even want to say empathy. I love the way they're becoming warriors and they're fighting back and saying it's their time. They have the right to live any way they want and to gender identify however they want.
The fight for same-sex marriage here in Australia is hotting up. With your wealth of experience, what would your advice be to Australian activists and to the LGBT community?
The organizations need to pressure the politicians, but the activists, you have to do things that'll keep getting you press. We showed up at the courthouse every Valentine's Day to ask for marriage licenses and were turned away. You have to do some things together that you can do anywhere in Australia. And there's no such thing as gay marriage, by the way, because there's no gay driver's license or gay death certificate, and there's no gay marriage certificate. It's just marriage. Do you know what I mean? It's just marriage. It's just a certificate. What I would suggest is always do things, always keep it in the public mind. First of all, come out. If you can come out, come out, come out wherever you are. Because once they get to know you, to know us is to love us, right? So you have to come out and you have to let people know you on a personal level. The reason they wanted us to stay in the closet was because the closet hid who we were. We were somehow living in this shadowy underground world confined to the bars and the baseball fields and the closets. We accepted our own prisons. I know the majority of Australians, right, are in favor of same-sex marriage, yes?
Absolutely.
So it's only a matter of time before whoever is stopping you will collapse. I promise you. I just want to say, I produced a festival, the first queer comedy festival in Sydney, Australia, in the 1980s, I think, yeah, or maybe 1990. It was a huge, and I brought a bunch of comics over. We sold out. It was great during Gay Mardi Gras, and I'm hoping to come over next year. I made an album in 1979. I was in a play opposite Harvey Fierstein in Torch Song Trilogy, and the name of my play was called Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom. And the reviewers in New York said, oh, well, we love both Harvey Fierstein and Robin Tyler, but the idea of getting married to someone of your same sex just won't cut it. She has to be more realistic. So I've brought that play back, and I'm doing it at a one-woman show. It's 2 hours long, called Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom. And it's the whole history of the gay movement in Canada and the States. And it ends with my marriage to Diane. So, you know,
a happy
don't let
ending.
Them stop. It's a happy ending. Yes, it is.
Are you planning to bring that to Australia?
Yes, I am. There's a smaller room in the Opera House. I'd like to do it there.
We would love to have you. Don't forget to put Melbourne on the map as well. And if you come down here to Melbourne, we'd love to have you back on the show again.
Listen, I will come to... I know where the intellectual city is. You're being very... I know, darling, I know Melbourne is like, you know, the New York but smarter of Australia. I understand. I understand.
Robin Tyler, the female Larry Kramer, speaking to us from the USA. Thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's Joy 94.9 broadcasting from New York, but smarter. Love it.
The intellectual Melbourne.
Intellectual Melbourne. We'll definitely have Robin back for her show, Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom. She gave some advice to us, or to activists and the LGBT community here pressure the politicians and get press. And she gave the example of having something that you can do anywhere in Australia, so whether it's a little country town or the big city. Because I think that's one of the things that when same-sex marriage comes up, sometimes rural areas are behind. I mean, if you look at the National Party politicians, there's many more against. Is that perhaps a way that we could bring some people along?
Well, I think that ties into what she was saying about one of the best things to do is to come out if you're able to, because more visibility means people, it's not a question. You know, I mean, I think there aren't that many people that would throw around racist comments about, you know, let's just say Polish people. If, for example, then the door opens and a bunch of people come walking in with thick Polish accents and wearing attire with a Polish flag on it, you know, they'd be, oh, I better be quiet now. So
much harder to do if you know somebody and
100%.
You know, actually they're not too bad, they're just ordinary people.
What we were saying earlier in the show about how states that have had same-sex marriage, now the 34 states that have had it, or 36 states, their attitude towards this ruling from the Supreme Court about 10 days ago is much more positive than the states that have never allowed same-sex marriage, where they're very frightened of it.
Well, once you stop becoming a statistic and actually become a person, people tend to treat you a bit differently.
Exactly.
There is another statistic that has come out. Less than half of Americans would actually attend a same-sex wedding. So currently they did a bit of a survey and 7% of Americans have so far attended one. But Democrats and liberals are more likely to attend than Republicans.
I love a good gay wedding.
I haven't been to one yet. Oh, I've got an invite.
I went to a lesbian one, which was very lesbian, in a park in North Fitzroy. And then I went to a gay boy one, which was very gay boy, on a bigger state. It was a full bang up weekend of an extravaganza. So they know how to party.
I'm waiting for an invite. We've had lots of fun looking at the US version of same-sex marriage, and we eagerly await the Australian version.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe. On a worldwide wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. We've had lots of fun exploring the US tonight. A big, big thank you to our guest Robin Tyler, comedian and out and proud activist since the 1960s.
Thanks to all the people who've interacted with us on Facebook this week. Angela, Liao, David, Liz, Kate, Gillian and a heap more. And thank you to Lana for your SMS with a picture of you swimming at the Glamourhead Sharks. And thank you to the lovely Gordon at the front counter as well.
We'll catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.